This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser from Bloomberg Radio.
We talk a lot about Robinhood, founded a few years ago, and how we've seen it really explode in popularity this year. We continue to see the financial sector being disrupted by a lot of newer companies. One company that really came on the space a few years ago and really one of the first firms to start disrupting financial investing and the industry was Wealthfront, changing how investors manage their investments, taking it online. So let's bring in Andy Ratcliff. He is co-founder and CEO of Wealthfront, and he joins us on the phone in California. Andy, it's great to have you here with Paul and myself.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, we do want to talk about some of the new features that you've got, but first up, just want to ask you about what your world has been like since COVID. I mean, take us back to March and then kind of where we are today and where you guys are with your teams and everything.
Well, first, let me give a little bit of context so I can answer that question. So for your listeners who are not aware, we're a next-gen banking service that helps young professionals manage their money. So we provide high-interest checking and low-cost investment management services all through a five-star rated app, and our vision is to automate all of your finances. We call this self-driving money, and by that what I mean is you can direct deposit your paycheck with us. We automatically pay your bills and then route the remaining money to the most appropriate investment or savings account, depending on your situation and goals. So with that in mind, the thing I think that's affected us the most are, I think there's been a bunch of people, rather than wanting a diversified and managed portfolio, I think that day trading has really taken off this year.
Right.
And the other big thing that we've noticed is that with the drop in interest rates, people are more inclined to day trade or try to pick securities in order to make up for the fact that they're not earning that interest on their savings.
So, Andy, during this pandemic, I've upped my digital banking game pretty substantially, I must say. And I find, and with a number of financial institutions, so it seems like these big players, they're investing money in fintech, they're investing money in their front-end platforms as they integrate with their consumers. What's your competitive advantage going against maybe some of the big commercial banks or brokerage firms and things like that?
Well, I would say that it's business model and technology. So first, let me talk about business model. Traditional banks use branches. And what most people don't realize is that the average branch costs the average consumer $200 per year. So if you take the cost to operate a branch and divide it by the number of people that it serves, it costs you about $200 a year, or costs a bank $200 a year to offer that branch. Well, they've got to pay for that. And the way that they pay for that is through a number of fees that most people don't like. Next-generation banking services like Wealthfront don't charge those nickel-and-dime fees. So you're going to be far better off, first of all, just not from not having the fees. Second of all, we pay interest on our balances. We pay 0.35%. I use Wells Fargo. They pay me 0% on my checking balance. So the fact that they have to support branches is a real negative for young people who don't want to go to a branch. It's probably a positive for a baby boomer who likes that personal interaction. So it's a very generational thing. On technology, banks are terrible at developing software. You know, JPMorgan Chase got quite a bit of attention a few months ago because they wrote off their personal finance app called Finn. In contrast, Wealthfront is the highest rated financial app in the App Store. Just because both companies offer software doesn't mean that they're of comparable quality.
You know, Andy, you have seen a lot of cycles in the financial industry. You co-founded, were a general partner at Benchmark Capital. You've been an investor in the likes of Juniper, Equinox. I mean, you see the world from a lot of different angles. When it comes to specifically, though, the financial industry, what do you make of something like a Robinhood?
Well, every once in a while, something comes along that really just captures the industry's imagination, and free trading really did that. And they've done a superb job of growing the business as a result of offering something that people really wanted.
It's interesting, Andy. I think, you know, we're all in the old enough, sadly, I guess, to remember the dot-com boom, day trading, that kind of thing. It didn't turn out very well for some of those folks, and it kind of signaled in hindsight that was clearly a peak in the market. Any concerns about that here, or do you just feel it's different this time?
No. One of the funny things is that every 15 years or so, there is a day trading boom, and it usually coincides with a market that's gone up by 40% in less than 6 months. Because when the market trades up very, very significantly, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. Any stock you pick is going to go up. The mistake that individual investors make is they confuse absolute performance with relative performance. You know, if the market's up 40% and you're up 25, you think you're a genius and you're actually terrible.
But
it always happens when markets go up by a large amount very, very quickly.
So does this one end poorly then, you think, for a lot of investors who maybe only think the market goes up?
Of course. It always does.
Yeah.
So, Andy, I know you at Stanford Business School teach some courses on technology entrepreneurship. I'd love to get your thoughts about the feeling, and you're close to Silicon Valley, what this pandemic may do, if anything, to the sense of entrepreneurship in this country, maybe the willingness to finance risk. Do you think it's going to have any impact, or innovation, and it will find its way?
The latter. Innovation is innovation, and it's going to find its way. Hmm. I think that the big change that's going to result from the pandemic is a greater embracing of remote workers. You know, our company is an example. We shut down on March 13 when we went to shelter in place. And no one has been to our office since. And, you know, you can either fight it or you can embrace it. And we've learned that there are many things that we now do that actually lead to better productivity. So when we are allowed to go back to the office, and we've told our employees that we won't expect them to go back until there is a widely available vaccine, we think that actually not everyone will go back and will embrace that.
What works better? Because I know that there's a really big debate, Andy, about productivity. And depending on who you talk to, some say it's fine or it's even better. Some say not so much, and that people miss that face-to-face, that running into somebody, you know, with an idea, and then you move off of that.
I think you need to drill down into it. What we have found is that our productivity among our younger single employees has gone up because they actually don't have something else to do, so they tend to be working more. Our productivity for our employees who are parents with young kids has plummeted. But the vast majority of our company is made up of young people who are single. So when you average them out, our overall productivity is up.
Andy, what's the feedback you're getting from your students at Stanford Business School here? How are they maybe viewing the world here? I mean, they're going to be a generation coming out in a pandemic. I'm wondering if that's changed their views of the world, or maybe beginning to change their views of the world. Are you sensing any of that?
You know, I tend not to fall into that because the current environment is not indicative of the future. You know, this is an important consideration in investing. The biggest mistake that investors make is that they project the current environment onto the future, which is why, you know, the biggest mistake researchers have found in individual investors make is that when they buy when the market goes up and they sell when the market goes down, because they think that's what's going to continue. So I counsel my students not to pay attention to this at all. It's likely to make finding a job a little bit more difficult, but long term, I don't think it's going to change their prospects.
What about the prospects for colleges and universities? We know some of them are financially having a tougher time right now, and I know you're on the board of trustees and chairman of the endowment committee at University of Pennsylvania. And I do wonder, what do you see when it comes to academia, what happens maybe where there might be some longer-term impacts because of COVID?
And what might those longer-term impacts be?
Well, maybe more hybrid. or maybe some fallout among some universities that aren't as financially stable. I almost feel like, just like we've gotten over retailed, Andy, I feel like we've gotten over schooled here, especially when it comes to higher education.
You know, that's been the case for decades, though, and that doesn't seem to winnow out the less financially stable universities. They seem to make it through. So I guess I'm not as concerned about that.
So you don't really see any fallout, and you think even financially, if schools might have a tough time for maybe this year, maybe next year, they'll be okay. They'll weather through?
Exactly. You know, the same was said during the financial crisis in 08 and 09, and everyone seemed to have made it through that.
Hey, before we go, you guys did have an announcement, and I know you guys have a new service. Talk to us a little bit about that, because I do feel like companies, especially because of COVID maybe, or maybe it was in the works anyway, are kind of, you know, thinking of, you know, some initiatives that maybe were in the works, they pushed out even sooner.
Well, with software development, you can't push something out
sooner.
That's
true. That's fair.
It's like being pregnant. You have to finish writing the code. So I wish that were the case for a software company. Maybe a services company, you can do that. But in our case, I talked earlier about our vision of self-driving money. And a few weeks ago, we launched our first feature in the self-driving money area that we call Autopilot. It automates your savings, and it makes banking and investing work better together. So you can think of Autopilot as a financial assistant. So basically, the way that it works is you pick the account that you want it to monitor, be it your checking account or your Wealthfront cash account, and whenever your balance goes at least $100 above the threshold that you set, we automatically move the money to an investment account of your choice. And that way, you can make sure that your money is much better optimized than if it's just sitting around and not earning anything. And so that's the first of many features that you're going to see in our self-driving money initiative. And over time, you're going to see more sources and destinations for that money. And we're going to move that money much faster.
Well, I hope you'll come back and talk some more, Andy, because I think we could easily sit down for you for an hour and just keep on talking, because you just look at the world in so many different ways. Andy, thank you so much. Andy Ratcliffe, he's co-founder and CEO at Wealthfront, on the phone from California.